Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Mistborn, Shadows of Self by Brandon Sanderson. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Chris Gennebach, Bradley Smith, Denny Stoller, Tracy Oliveira, Yasmin Toison, Bob Payne, Eva Wilhelm, Richard Rowan, David Harris, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, Bruce Allen Rauscher, Chris Davenport, David Jordan, Eric Messner, Laura C. Harris, Thomas Keegan, Robbie Gay, Matthew Keenan, Maggie Donnelly, Rebecca Shear, Jonathan Foyer, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Michael Glenn, Casey Platt, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Nick DePinto, Lise Bruneau, Christopher Sheeran, Gregory Woodell, Evan Casey, Patrick Busink, James Lewis, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Eric Singdalson, James Konacek, Tim Carlin, Christopher Walker, Scott Graham, Dylan Lynch, Tony Nam, Scott McCormick, and Thomas Penny. Mistborn, Shadows of Self. Waxillium Ladrian, lawman for hire, swung off his horse and turned to face the saloon.
Aww.
The kid hopped down from his own horse.
You didn't catch your spur on the stirrup and trip.
That happened once.
Yeah, but it was super funny.
Stay with the horses.
Waxillium tossed the kid his reins.
Don't tie up Destroyer. I might need her.
Sure.
And don't steal anything.
The kid, round-faced and 17, with barely a hint of stubble on his face, despite weeks of trying, nodded.
I promise I won't swipe nothing of yours, Wax.
That's not what I said. Just stay with the horses and try not to talk to anyone.
Waxillium shook his head, pushing into the saloon, feeling a spring in his step. He was filling his metal mind a smidge, decreasing his weight by about 10%. Common practice for him these days, ever since he'd run out of stored weight during one of his first bounty hunts a few months back. The saloon, of course, was dirty. Practically everything out here in the roughs was dusty, worn, or broken. 5 years out here, and he still wasn't used to that. True, he'd spent most of those 5 years trying to make a living as a clerk, moving farther and farther from population centers in an effort to avoid getting recognized. But in the roughs, even the larger population centers were dirtier than those back in Ellendale. And here, on the fringes of populated lands, dirty didn't even begin to describe life. The men in the saloon sat slumped low to their tables, hardly looking up. That was another thing about the roughs. Both plants and people were more prickly, and they grew lower to the ground. Even the fan-like acacias, which did stretch high at times, had this fortified, hardy sense about them. He scanned the room, hands on hips, hoping he'd draw attention. He didn't, which nagged at him. Why wear a fine city suit with a lavender cravat if nobody was going to notice? At least they weren't snickering like those in the last saloon. Hand on his gun, Waxillium sauntered up to the bar. The barkeep was a tall man who looked to have some terrace blood in him from that willowy build, though his refined cousins in the basin would be horrified to see him chewing on a greasy chicken leg with one hand while serving a mug with the other. Waxillium tried not to be nauseated. The local notion of hygiene was another thing he wasn't yet accustomed to. Out here, the fastidious ones were those who remembered to wipe their hands on their trousers between picking their nose and shaking your hand. Waxillium waited, then waited some more.
Yeah?
I'm looking for a man. Goes by the name of Granite Joe.
Don't know him.
Don't. He's only the single most notorious outlaw in these parts.
It's safer to not know men like Joe.
The barkeep took a bite out of his chicken leg.
But I have a friend.
That's surprising.
The barkeep glared at him.
Sorry. Continue.
My friend might be willing to know people that others won't. It'll take a little time to get him. You'll pay?
I'm a lawman. I do what I do in the name of justice.
So, you'll pay?
Yes, I'll pay.
Good.
The barkeep gestured for Waxillium to follow. They wove through the room, around tables and past the pianoforte, which sat beside one of the pillars between two tables. It didn't look like it had been played in ages, and someone had set a row of dirty mugs on it. Next to the stairs, they entered a small room. It smelled dusty.
Wait here.
Waxillium folded his arms, eyeing the room's lone chair. The white paint was flaking and peeling. He didn't doubt that if he sat down, he'd end up with half of it stuck to his trousers. He was growing more comfortable with the people of the Roughs, if not their particular habits. These few months chasing bounties had shown him that there were good men and women out here, mixed among the rest. Yet they all had this stubborn fatalism about them. They didn't trust authority, and often shunned lawmen, even if it meant letting a man like Granite Joe continue to ravage and plunder. Without the bounties set by the railroad and mining companies, nothing would ever... Waxillium stopped, then grabbed the gun at his side and burned steel. Blue lines sprang up, pointing from his chest toward nearby sources of metal, several of which were just outside the shuttered window. Others pointed downward. This saloon had a basement, which was unusual out in the Roughs. He could push on those lines if he needed to, shoving on the metal they connected to. For now, he just watched as a small rod slipped between the window casements, then lifted, raising the latch that held them closed. With the window now open, a young woman in dark trousers hopped in, rifle in one hand. Lean, with a squarish face, she carried an unlit cigar in her teeth and looked vaguely familiar to Waxillium. She stood up, apparently satisfied, then turned to close the window. As she did, she scrambled backward, dropping her cigar, raising her rifle. Waxillium raised his own gun and prepared his allomancy, wishing he'd found a way to protect himself from bullets. He could push on metal, yes, but he wasn't fast enough to stop gunfire unless he pushed on the gun before the trigger was pulled.
Hey, aren't you that guy? The one who killed Perret the Black?
Waxillium Ladrian, lawman for hire.
You're kidding. That's how you introduce yourself.
Sure, why not?
She studied him for a few moments.
A cravat? Really?
It's kind of my thing. The gentleman bounty hunter.
Why would a bounty hunter need a thing in the first place?
It's important to have a reputation. The outlaws all have them. People have heard of men like Granite Joe from one side of the Roughs to the other. Why shouldn't I do the same?
Because it paints a target on your head.
Worth the danger. But speaking of targets...
Waxillium waved his gun, then nodded toward hers.
You're after the bounty on Joe.
Sure am. You too?
She nodded.
Split it?
She lowered her rifle.
Fine. The one who shoots him gets a double portion, though.
I was planning to bring him in alive.
Good. Gives me a better chance of killing him first.
She grinned at him, slipping over to the door.
The name's Lessie. Granite is in here somewhere, then? Have you seen him?
No, I haven't.
Waxillium joined her at the door.
I asked the barkeep, and he sent me in here.
You asked the barkeep?
Sure. I've read the stories. Barkeeps know everything, and you're shaking your head.
Everyone in this saloon belongs to Joe, Mr. Cravat. Hell, half the people in this town belong to him. You asked the barkeep?
I believe we've established that.
Rust!
She cracked the door and looked out.
How in Ruin's name did you take down Perret the Black?
Surely it's not that bad. Everyone in the bar can't...
He peeked out the door. The tall barkeep hadn't run off to fetch anyone. No, he was out in the tap room of the saloon, gesturing toward the side room's door.
Now stand up and arm yourselves.
The assembled thugs and miscreants looked hesitant, and some were gesturing angrily, but more than a few had guns out.
Damn.
Back out the way you came in?
Her response was to slip the door closed with the utmost care, then shove him aside and scramble toward the window. She grabbed the windowsill to step out. Lessie dropped to the floor. Waxillium dove down beside her.
Sharpshooter.
Are you always this observant, Mr. Cravat?
No, only when I'm being shot at.
Waxillium peeked up over the lip of the windowsill, but there were a dozen places nearby where the shooter could be hiding.
This is a problem.
There's our razor-sharp power of observation again.
Lessie crawled across the floor toward the door.
I meant in more ways than one.
Waxillium crossed the floor to Lessie.
How did they have time to get a sharpshooter into position?
They must have known that I was going to show up today. This whole place could be a trap.
Damn.
Through the small crack, he could see that the thugs were gesturing toward the door.
They're taking me seriously. Ha! The reputation is working. You see that? They're frightened.
Congratulations. Do you think they'll give me a reward if I shoot you?
Waxillium eyed a stairwell just outside their door.
We need to get upstairs.
What good will that do?
Well, for one thing, all the armed people who want to kill us are down here. I'd rather be somewhere else, and those stairs will be easier to defend than this room. Besides, we might find a window on the other side of the building and escape.
Yeah, if you want to jump two stories.
Look, I'm going to run for the steps. If you want to stay down here and fight your way out, great. You'll provide an ideal distraction for me.
Fine. We'll do it your way. But if we get shopped, you owe me a drink.
There is something familiar about her.
Waxillium nodded.
One, two, three.
Then he burst out of the door and leveled his gun at the nearest thug. The man jumped back as Waxillium shot three times and missed. Lessie scrambled out behind him and went for the stairs. The motley collection of thugs leveled weapons. Waxillium swung his gun back out of the way of his allomancy and shoved lightly on the blue lines pointing from him toward the men in the room. His push nudged their guns enough to spoil their aim. Waxillium followed Lessie up the steps, fleeing the storm of gunfire.
Holy hell!
When they reached the first landing, she looked back at him, cheeks flushed.
We're alive.
Something clicked like a lock in Waxillium's mind.
I have met you before.
No, you haven't.
The Weeping Bull! The Dancing Girl!
Oh, God, beyond.
She led the way up the stairs.
You remember.
I knew you were faking! Even Rusko wouldn't hire someone that uncoordinated, no matter how pretty her legs are.
Can we go jump out a window now, please?
Lessie checked the top floor for signs of thugs.
Why were you there? Chasing a bounty?
Yeah, kind of.
And you really didn't know they were gonna make
you... This conversation is done.
They stepped out onto the top floor, and Waxillium waited a moment until a shadow on the wall announced someone following them upstairs. Waxillium's shot missed the thug, but it did drive the man back. Granite Joe might own the men in this saloon, but they weren't overly loyal. The first few up the steps would almost certainly get shot, and none would be eager to take the risk. That would buy Waxillium some time. Lessie pushed into a room, passing an empty bed with a pair of boots beside it. She threw open the window, which was on the opposite side of the building from the sharpshooter. The town of Weathering spread before them, a lonely collection of shops and homes, hunkered down as if waiting, in vain, for the day when the railroad would stretch its fingers this far. In the middle distance, beyond the humble buildings, a few giraffes browsed lazily, the only sign of animal life on the vast plain. The drop out the window was straight down, no roof to climb onto. Lessie regarded the ground warily. Waxillium shoved his fingers in his mouth.
What the hell are you doing?
Calling my horse. We can hop down into the saddle and ride away.
You're serious?
Sure I am. We've been practicing.
A lone figure walked out onto the street below, the kid who had been following Waxillium.
Wax? Destroyer's just standing there drinking.
Hell.
You named your horse.
She's a little too placid, all right?
Waxillium climbed up onto the windowsill.
I thought the name might inspire her. Wait! Bring her out here! We're gonna jump!
Like hell we are! You think there's something magical about a saddle that will keep us from breaking the horse's back when we drop into it?
Well, I've read about people doing this.
Yeah, I've got an idea. Next, why don't you call out Granite Joe and go stand out in the road and have a good old-fashioned showdown at noon?
You think that would work?
No, it won't work! Nobody does that, it's stupid! Rowan, how did you kill Paray the Black?
Well...
Oh, hell, you got him in the crapper, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you shoot him in the back, too?
As bravely as any man ever shot another in the back.
There might be hope for you yet.
He nodded toward the window.
Jump?
Sure. Why not break both my legs before getting shot? Might as well go all in, Mr. Cravat.
I think we'll be fine, Miss Pink Garter.
She raised an eyebrow.
If you're going to identify me by my clothing choices, then I figure I can do the same.
It shall never be mentioned again. So...
He nodded, flaring his metals, preparing to hold on to her and slow them as they fell, just enough to make it seem like they'd miraculously survived the jump. As he did, however, he noticed one of his blue lines moving, a faint but thick one pointing across the street. The window in the mill. Sunlight glinted off something inside. Roxillium immediately grabbed Lessie and pulled her down.
Another sharpshooter!
Your power of observation is...
Shut it! Now what?
Roxillium frowned, considering the question. He glanced at the bullet hole, gauging the trajectory. The sharpshooter had aimed too high. Even if Roxillium hadn't ducked, he'd likely have been all right.
Why aim high?
The moving blue line to the gun had indicated the sharpshooter running to get into position before shooting. Was it just rushed targeting? Or was there a more sinister reason?
To knock me out of the sky? When I flew out the window? Damn.
Waxillium scrambled over to the doorway and peeked out toward the stairwell. A group of men were creeping up the steps, but he saw no blue lines. These men weren't the normal thugs from below. These men wore tight white shirts, had pencil-thin mustaches, and were armed with crossbows, not a speck of metal on them. Rusts. They knew he was a coin shot, and Granite Joe had a kill squad ready for him. He ducked back into the room and grabbed Lessie by the arm.
Your informant said Granite Joe was in this building?
Yeah, he most certainly is. He likes to be close when a gang is being gathered. He likes to keep an eye on his men.
This building has a basement.
So?
So, hang on.
He grabbed her in both hands and rolled onto the ground, holding her over him. He increased his weight. He had a great deal of it stored in his metal mine by now, after weeks of siphoning it off. Now he drew it all out, magnifying his weight many-fold in an instant. The wooden floor burst open beneath them. Waxillium fell through, his fine clothing getting ripped, and dropped through the air, towing Lessie after him. Eyes squeezed closed, he pushed the hundreds of blue lines behind him, those leading to the nails in the floor below. He blasted them downward to shatter the ground level's floor and open the way into the basement. They crashed through the ground floor in a shower of dust and splinters. Waxillium managed to slow their descent with a steel push, but they still came down hard, smashing into a table in a basement chamber. Waxillium forced himself to twist around, shaking free of the broken wood. The basement, surprisingly, was paneled in fine hardwoods and lit by lamps shaped like curvaceous women. The table they had hit bore a rich white tablecloth, though it was now wadded in a bunch, the table legs shattered and the table itself at an angle. A man sat at the table's head. Waxillium managed to stand up in the wreckage and level a gun at the fellow, who had a blocky face and dark blue-gray skin, the mark of a man with Kolos heritage. Granite Joe. Waxillium appeared to have interrupted his dinner, judging by the napkin tucked into his collar and the spilled soup on the broken table in front of him.
Oh!
Lessie rolled over and brushed splinters off her clothing. Her rifle had apparently been left upstairs. Waxillium held his gun in a firm grip as he eyed the two duster-wearing bodyguards behind Granite Joe. A man and a woman. Siblings, he'd heard, and crack shots. They'd been surprised by his fall, obviously, for though they'd rested hands on their weapons, they hadn't drawn. Waxillium had the upper hand, with the gun on Joe. But if he did shoot, the siblings would kill him in a heartbeat. Perhaps he hadn't thought through this line of attack quite as well as he should have. Joe scraped at the remnants of his broken bowl, framed by splatters of red soup on the tablecloth. He managed to get some onto his spoon and lifted it to his lips.
You should be dead.
You might want to look at hiring a new group of thugs. The ones upstairs aren't worth much.
I wasn't referring to them. How long have you been up here, in the roughs, making trouble? 2 years?
One.
Waxillium had been up here longer, but he had only recently started making trouble, as Joe put it.
You think your type is new up here, son? Wide-eyed, with a low-slung gun belt and bright new spurs? Come to reform us of our uncivilized ways? We see dozens like you every year. The others have the decency to either learn to be bribed or to get dead before they ruin too much, but not you.
He's stalling, waiting for the men upstairs to run down.
Drop your weapons.
Waxillium held his gun on Joe.
Drop them or I shoot.
The two guards didn't move. No metal lines on the guard on the right or on Joe himself. The one on the left had a handgun, perhaps trusting the speed of his draw against a coin shot. The other two had fancy hand crossbows in their holsters, he bet. Single shot, made of wood and ceramic. Built for killing coin shots. Even with allomancy, Waxillion would never be able to kill all three of them without getting shot himself. Sweat trickled down his temple. He was tempted to just pull his trigger and shoot, but he'd be killed if he did that. And they knew it. It was a standoff, but they had reinforcements coming.
You don't belong here.
Joe leaned forward, elbows on his broken table.
We came here to escape folks like you. Your rules, your assumptions. We don't want you.
If that were true, then people wouldn't come to me crying because you killed their sons. You might not need Elendil's laws up here, but that doesn't mean you don't need any laws at all. And it doesn't mean men like you should be able to do whatever you want.
Granite Joe shook his head, standing up, hand to his holster.
This isn't your habitat, son. Everyone has a price up here. If they don't, they don't fit in. You'll die slow and painful, just like a lion would die in that city of yours. What I'm doing today, this is a mercy.
As Joe drew, Waxillion pushed himself off the wall lamps to his right. They were firmly anchored, so his elemental shove pushed him to the left. Joe got his crossbow out and loosed a bolt, but the shot missed. Waxillium's own bullet flew true for once, hitting the female guard who had pulled out her crossbow. She dropped, and as Waxillium crashed into the wall, he pushed, knocking the gun out of the other guard's hand. Waxillium's push, unfortunately, also flung his own gun out of his hand, but sent it spinning toward the second bodyguard. His gun smacked the man right in the face, dropping him. Waxillium steadied himself, looking across the room at Joe, who seemed baffled that both his guards were down. Waxillium scrambled toward the large, Kolos-blooded man. If he could reach some metal to use as a weapon, maybe. Waxillium stopped and looked over his shoulder at Lessie, who was pointing a small hand crossbow right at him.
Everyone up here has a price.
Waxillium stared at the crossbow bolt, tipped with obsidian. Where had she been carrying that?
She put herself in danger, scrambling up the stairs with me. How could she have been?
But Joe had known about his allomancy. So had she. Lessie knew he could spoil the thug's aim when she joined him in running up the steps.
Finally, do you have an explanation of why you didn't just shoot him in the saloon room where the barkeep put him?
She stood there, studying Waxillium.
I did warn you that everyone in the saloon was in Joe's employ.
I still think your legs are pretty.
She met his eyes. Then she turned the crossbow and shot Granite Joe in the neck. Waxillium blinked as the enormous man dropped to the floor.
That's all you could come up with to win me over?
You have nice legs.
Seriously? You are so doomed up here, Cravat.
Oh, Harmony. I thought you were going to shoot me for sure.
Should have. I can't believe it.
Just then, the troop of miscreants from above finally gathered the nerve to rush down the stairwell. A good half dozen of them burst into the room with weapons drawn. Lessie dove for the fallen bodyguard's gun. Waxillium thought quickly, then did what came most naturally. He struck a dramatic pose in the rubble, 1 foot up, Granite Joe dead beside him, both bodyguards felled. Dust from the broken ceiling still sprinkled down, illuminated in sunlight pouring through a window above. The thugs looked down at the fallen corpse of their boss, then gaped toward Waxillium. Finally, looking like children who had been caught in the pantry trying to get at the cookies, they lowered their weapons. The ones at the front tried to push through the ones at the back to get away, and the whole clamorous mess of them swarmed back up the steps, leaving the forlorn barkeep, who fled last of all. Waxillium turned and offered his hand to Lessie, who let him pull her to her feet.
You're surprising as a donkey who can dance, Mr. Cravat.
It helps to have a thing.
Yeah. You think I should get a thing?
Getting a thing has been one of the most important choices I made in coming up to the Ruffs.
I have no idea what we're talking about, but it sounds kind of dirty.
Lessie glanced past him toward Granite Joe's corpse, which stared lifelessly, lying in a pool of his own blood.
Thanks for not murdering me.
I was gonna kill him eventually anyway and turn him in for the bounty.
Yes, well, I doubt you were planning to do it in front of his entire gang while trapped in a basement with no escape.
True. Right stupid of me, that was.
So why do it?
I've done plenty of things in Joe's name I wish I hadn't. And as far as I know, I never shot a man who didn't deserve it. Killing you, well, it seems like it would have been killing what you stood for, too. You know?
I think I can grasp the concept.
She rubbed at a bleeding scratch on her neck where she'd brushed broken wood during their fall.
Next time, though, I hope it won't involve making quite so big a mess.
I liked this saloon.
I'll do my best. I intend to change things out here. If not the whole Ruffs, then at least this town.
Lessie walked over to Grenna Joe's corpse.
Well, I'm sure if any evil pianos were thinking of attacking the city, they'll have second thoughts now, considering your prowess with that pistol.
You saw that, did you?
Rarely seen such a feat.
Lessie knelt and went through Joe's pockets.
Well, it takes skill. Maybe you should spend a little less time with your thing and more with your gun.
Now that sounded dirty.
Good. I hate being crass by accident.
She came out with Joe's pocketbook and smiled, tossing it up and catching it. Above, in the hole Waxillium had made, an equine head poked out, followed by a smaller teenage one in an oversized bowler hat. Where had he gotten that?
Sure, now you come, stupid horse.
Actually, seems to me like staying away from you during a gunfight makes her a pretty damn smart horse.
Waxillium smiled and held out his hand to Lessie. She took it, and he pulled her close. Then he lifted them out of the wreckage on a line of blue light. Seventeen years later, Winsting smiled to himself as he watched the setting sun. It was an ideal evening to auction himself off.
We have my safe room ready.
Winsting lightly gripped the balcony banister.
Just in case.
Yes, my lord.
Flog wore his silly Ruff's hat along with a duster, though he'd never been outside of the Ellendale Basin. The man was an excellent bodyguard, despite his terrible fashion sense, but Winsting made certain to pull on the man's emotions anyway, subtly enhancing Flog's sense of loyalty. One could never be too careful.
My lord?
Flog glanced toward the chamber behind them.
They're all here, my lord. Are you ready?
Not turning away from the setting sun, Winsting raised a finger to hush the bodyguard. The balcony, in the fourth octant of Ellendale, overlooked the canal and the hub of the city, so he had a nice view of the Field of Rebirth. Long shadows stretched from the statues of the Ascendant Warrior and the Last Emperor in the Green Park, where, according to fanciful legend, their corpses had been discovered following the Great Catasandra and the Final Ascension. The air was muggy, slightly tempered by a cool breeze off Hamandar Bay a couple of miles to the west. Winsting tapped his fingers on the balcony railing, patiently sending out pulses of alimentic power to shape the emotions of those in the room behind him, or at least any foolish enough not to be wearing their aluminum-lined hats. Any moment now. Initially appearing as pinprick spots in the air, mist grew before him, spreading like frost across a window. Tendrils stretched and spun about one another, becoming streams, then rivers of motion, currents shifting and blanketing the city, engulfing it, consuming it.
A misty night. That's bad luck, it is.
Don't be a fool.
Winsting adjusted his cravat.
He's watching us. The mists are his eyes, my lord. Sure as ruin, that is.
Superstitious nonsense.
Winsting turned and strode into the room. Behind him, Flog shut the doors before the mists could seep into the party. Two dozen people, along with the inevitable bodyguards, who mingled and chatted there, were a select group. Not just important, but also very much at odds with one another, despite their deliberate smiles and meaningless small talk. He preferred to have rivals at events like this. Let them all see each other, and let each know the cost of losing the contest for his favor. Winsting stepped among them. Unfortunately, many did wear hats whose aluminum linings would protect them from emotional alimency, though he had personally assured each attendee that none of the others would have soothers or rioters with them. He'd said nothing of his own abilities, of course. So far as any of them knew, he wasn't an allomancer. He glanced across the room to where Blom tended bar. The man shook his head. Nobody else in the room was burning any metals. Excellent. Winsting stepped up to the bar, then turned and raised his hands to draw everyone's attention. The gesture exposed the twinkling diamond cufflinks he wore on his stiff white shirt. The settings were wooden, of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our little auction. The bidding begins now, and it ends when I hear the offer I like most.
He said nothing more. Too much talk would kill the drama. Winsting took the drink one of his servers offered and stepped out to mingle, then hesitated as he looked over the crowd.
Edwan Ladrian is not here.
Winsting refused to call the man by his silly moniker, Mr. Suit.
No.
I thought you said everyone had arrived.
Everyone who said they were coming.
Flog shuffled, uncomfortable. Winsting pursed his lips, but otherwise hid his disappointment. He'd been certain his offer had intrigued Edwin. Perhaps the man had bought out one of the other crime lords in the room. Something to consider. Winsting made his way to the central table, which held the nominal centerpiece of the evening. It was a painting of a reclining woman. Winsting had painted it himself, and he was getting better. The painting was worthless, but the men and women in this room would still offer him huge sums for it. The first one to approach him was Dowser, who ran most of the smuggling operations into the Fifth Octant. The 3 days of scrub on his cheeks was shadowed by a bowler that conspicuously he had not left in the cloakroom. A pretty woman on his arm and a sharp suit did little to clean up a man like Dowser. Winsting wrinkled his nose. Most everyone in the room was a despicable piece of trash, but the others had the decency not to look like it.
It's ugly as sin.
Dowser looked over the painting.
I can't believe this is what you're having us bid on. A little cheeky, isn't it?
And you'd rather I was completely forthright, Mr. Dowser. You'd have me proclaim it far and wide, pay me, and in exchange you get my vote in the Senate for the next year?
Dowser glanced to the sides, as if expecting the constables to burst into the room at any moment.
You'll notice the shades of gray on her cheeks, a representation of the ashen nature of life in a pre-catacendric world, hmm? My finest work yet. Do you have an offer to get the bidding started?
Dowser just stood there. He would eventually make a bid. Each person in this room had spent weeks posturing before agreeing to this meeting. Half were crime lords like Dowser. The others were Winsting's own counterparts, high lords and ladies from prominent noble houses, though no less corrupt than the crime lords.
Aren't you frightened, Winsting?
Winsting frowned. He didn't recognize the woman on Dowser's arm. Slender, with short golden hair and a doe-eyed expression, she was uncommonly tall.
Frightened, my dear? Of the people in this room?
No, that your brother will find out what you do.
I assure you, Replar knows exactly what I am.
The governor's own brother, asking for bribes.
If that truly surprises you, my dear, then you have lived too sheltered a life. Far bigger fish than I have been sold on this market. When the next catch arrives, perhaps you will see.
That comment caught Dowser's attention. Winsting smiled as he saw the gears clicking behind Dowser's eyes. Winsting moved over to select some shrimp and quiche from a server's tray. He turned to Flog, who was always at his elbow.
The woman with Dowser is a spy, perhaps in constabulary employ.
My lord, we checked and double-checked each person attending.
Well, you missed one. I'd bet my fortune on it. Follow her after the meeting. If she splits from Dowser for any reason, see that she meets with an accident.
Yes, my lord.
And Flog, do be straightforward about it. I won't have you trying to find a place where the mists won't be watching. Understand?
Yes, my lord.
Ah, excellent.
Winsting smiled broadly as he strolled over to Lord Hughes Entrone, cousin and confidant to the head of House Entrone. Winston spent an hour mingling, and slowly the bids started to come in. Some of the attendees were reluctant. They would rather have met him one-on-one, making their covert offers, then slipping back into Elendel's underbelly. Crime lords and nobles alike, these all preferred to dance around a topic, not discuss it openly. But they did bid, and bid well. By the end of his first circuit of the room, Winsting had to forcibly contain his excitement. No longer would he have to limit his spending. If his brother could... The gunshot was so unexpected, he at first assumed that one of the servers had broken something. But no, he'd never heard a gun fired indoors before. He hadn't known just how stunning it could be. He gaped, the drink tumbling from his fingers as he tried to find the source of the shot. Then it became a storm, various sides firing at one another in a cacophony of death. Before he could cry for help, Flog had him by the arm, towing him toward the stairs down to the safe room. One of his other bodyguards stumbled against the doorway, looking with wide eyes at the blood on his shirt. Winston stared for too long at the dying man before Flog was able to tear him away and shove him into the stairwell.
What's happening?
The guard shut the door behind them and locked it. The bodyguards hurried him down the dim stairway, which was weakly lit by periodic electric lights.
Who fired? What happened?
No way of knowing. Happened too fast.
Winston saw his fortune dying a bloody death on the floor above him, and he felt sick as they finally reached the bottom of the stairs and a vault-like door which Flog pushed him through.
I'm going to go back up, see what I can salvage, find out who caused this.
Winston nodded and shut the door, locking it from the inside. He settled into a chair to wait, fretting. The small bunker of a room had wine and other amenities, but he couldn't be bothered. He wrung his hands. What would his brother say? Rusts, what would the papers say? He'd have to keep this quiet somehow. Winston glanced through the peephole to see Flog. Behind him, a small force of bodyguards watched the stairwell. It seemed the gunfire had stopped. Winston opened the door.
Well?
They're all dead.
All of them?
Every last one.
Flog walked into the room. Winston sat down in his chair.
Maybe that's good. Nobody can implicate us. Maybe we can just slip away. Cover our track somehow?
A daunting task. He owned this building. He'd be connected to these deaths. He'd need an alibi. Hell, he was going to have to go to his brother. This could cost him his seat, even if the general public never discovered what had happened. He slumped in his chair, frustrated.
Well, what do you think?
In response, a pair of hands grabbed Winston by the hair, pulled his head back, and efficiently slit his exposed throat.
I figure I should write one of these things to tell my side, not the side the historians will tell for me. I doubt they'll get it right. I don't know that I'd like them to, anyhow.
Wax tapped the book he was reading with the end of his pencil, then scribbled down a note to himself on a loose sheet.
I'm thinking of inviting the Boris brothers to the wedding.
Steris was sitting on the couch opposite the one Wax sat upon.
I know Sayes doesn't approve of what I've done, but what did he expect me to do? Knowing what I know.
The Boris brothers. They're acquaintances of yours, aren't they?
I shot their father. Twice.
I couldn't let it die. It's not right. Hemallergy is good now, I figure. Sayes is both sides now, right? Ruin isn't around anymore.
Are they likely to try to kill you?
Boris Jr. swore to drink my blood. Boris III, and yes, he's the brother of Boris Jr., don't ask, swore to, what was it? Eat my toes? He's not a very clever man.
We can use it. We should. Shouldn't we?
I'll just put them on the list then.
Wax looked up from the book.
You're going to invite my mortal enemies? To our wedding?
We have to invite someone.
Steris sat with her blonde hair up in a bun, her stacks of papers for the wedding arrangements settled around her like subjects at court. Her blue flowered dress was fashionable without being the least bit daring, and her prim hat clung to her hair so tightly it might as well have been nailed in place.
I'm certain there are better choices for invitations than people who want me dead. I hear family members are traditional.
As a point of fact, I believe your remaining family members actually do want you dead.
Well, yours don't. Not that I've heard, anyway. If you need to fill out the wedding party, invite more of them.
I've invited all of my family as would be proper, and all of my acquaintances that merit the regard.
She reached to the side, taking out a sheet of paper.
You, however, have given me only two names of people to invite. Wayne and a woman named Renette, who, you noted, probably wouldn't try to shoot you at your own wedding.
Oh, very unlikely. She hasn't tried to kill me in years. Not seriously, at least.
Steris set down the sheet.
Steris, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be flippant. Renette will be fine. We joke about her, but she's a good friend. She won't ruin the wedding, I promise.
Then who will?
Excuse me?
I have known you for an entire year now, Lord Waxillium. I can accept you for who you are, but I am under no illusions. Something will happen at our wedding. A villain will burst in, guns firing. Or we'll discover explosives in the altar. Or Father Bin will inexplicably turn out to be an old enemy and attempt to murder you instead of performing the ceremony. It will happen. I'm merely trying to prepare for it.
You're serious, aren't you? You're actually thinking of inviting one of my enemies so you can plan for a disruption.
I've sorted them by threat level and ease of access.
Wait.
Wax rose and walked over. He leaned down next to her, looking over her shoulder at her papers. Each sheet contained a detailed biography.
Ape Manton? The Dashier Boys? Rusts! Rick Stranger? I'd forgotten about him. Where did you get these?
Your exploits are a matter of public record, one that is of increasing interest to society.
How long did you spend on this?
Wax flipped through the pages in the stack.
I wanted to be thorough. This sort of thing helps me think. Besides, I wanted to know what you had spent your life doing.
That was actually kind of sweet, in a bizarre, sterist sort of way.
Invite Douglas Venture. He's kind of a friend, but he can't hold his liquor. You can count on him making a disturbance at the after party.
Excellent. And the other 37 seats in your section?
Invite leaders among the seamstresses and forge workers of my house, and the constables general of the various octants. It will be a nice gesture.
Very well.
If you want me to help more with the wedding planning...
No, the formal request to perform the ceremony that you sent to Father Bin was the only task required of you by protocol. Otherwise, I can handle it. This is the perfect sort of thing to occupy me. That said, someday I would like to know what is in that little book you peruse so often.
A moment later, Wayne all but tumbled in through the study's doorway. Darience, the house butler, stood apologetically just behind him. Wiry and of medium height, Wayne had a round, clean-shaven face and, as usual, wore his old rough's clothing, though Steris had pointedly supplied him with new clothing on at least three occasions.
Wayne, you could try the doorbell sometime.
Nah, that warns the butler.
Which is kind of the point?
Beady little buggers.
Wayne shut the door on Darience.
Can't trust him. Look, Wax, we've got to go. The marksman has made his move.
Finally. Let me grab my coat.
Wayne glanced toward Steris.
Hello, crazy.
Hello, idiot.
Wax buckled on his gun belt over his fine city suit, with vest and cravat, then threw on his mist coat duster.
Let's go.
Wayne pushed his way out the door and barreled down the stairs. Wax paused by Steris's couch.
A man must have his hobbies.
She raised another sheet of paper and inspected it.
I accept yours, Lord Waxillium, but do try to avoid being shot in the face, as we have wedding portraits to sit for this evening.
I'll remember that.
Keep an eye on my sister out there.
This is a dangerous chase. I doubt Marcy will be involved.
If you think that, then your professional faculties are suspect. It's a dangerous chase, so she'll find a way to be involved.
Wax hesitated by the door. He glanced back at her, and she looked up, meeting his eyes. It felt as if there should be something more to their parting, a send-off of some sort, fondness. Steris seemed to sense it too, but neither said anything. Wax tipped his head back, taking a shot of whiskey and metal flakes, then charged through the doorway and threw himself over the balcony railing. He slowed himself with a push on the silver inlays in the marble floor of the entrance hall. Darience opened the front door ahead of him as he raced out to join Wayne at the coach for the ride to... He froze on the steps down to the street.
What the hell is that?
Motor car!
Wayne was sitting in the back seat of the vehicle. Wax hastened down the steps and approached the machine. Marcy sat behind the steering mechanism, wearing a fashionable dress of lavender and lace. She looked much younger than her half-sister, Steris, though only 5 years separated them. She was a constable now, technically, an aide to the constable general of this octant. She'd never fully explained to him why she would leave behind her career as a solicitor to join the constables, but at least she'd been hired on not as a beat constable, but as an analyst and executive assistant. She shouldn't be subjected to danger in that role. Yet here she was. A glint of eagerness shone in her eyes as she turned to him.
Are you going to get in?
What are you doing here?
Driving. You'd rather Wayne do it?
I'd rather have a coach and a good team of horses.
Stop being so old-fashioned.
Marcy moved her foot and made the devilish contraption lurch forward.
Marksmen robbed the First Union, as you guessed.
Wax held on tightly. He'd guessed that marksmen would hit the bank 3 days ago. When it hadn't happened, he'd thought the man had fled to the roughs.
Captain Reddy thinks that marksmen will run for his hideout in the 7th Octant.
Reddy is wrong. Head for the breakouts.
She didn't argue. The motor car shook until they hit the new section of paving stones where the street smoothed out and the vehicle picked up speed. This was one of the latest motor cars, the type the broadsheets had been spouting about, with rubber wheels and a gasoline engine. The entire city was transforming to accommodate them.
You shouldn't be here, Marcy.
She kept her eyes forward.
You trained as an attorney. You belong in a courtroom, not chasing a killer.
I've done well caring for myself in the past. You never complained then.
Well, each time it felt like an exception, yet here you are again.
What's wrong with you lately? You complain about the motor car, about me being here, about your tea being too hot in the morning. One would almost think you'd made some horrible life decision that you regret deep down. Wonder what that could be.
She might have a point, mate.
You're not helping.
Wasn't intended to. Fortunately, I know which horrible life decision she's talking about. You really should have bought that hat we looked at last week. It was lucky. I've got a fifth sense for these things.
Fifth?
Yeah, can't smell worth a heap of beans.
There.
Wax leaned forward and looked through the windscreen. A figure bounded out of a side street, soaring through the air, landed in the street, then launched himself down the thoroughfare ahead of them.
You were right. How did you know?
Marks likes to be seen.
Wax slipped Vindication from her holster at his side.
Fancies himself a gentleman rogue. Keep this contraption moving steadily if you can.
Wax threw open the door and leaped out. He fired down and pushed on the bullet, launching himself upward. A push on a passing carriage nudged Wax to the side, so that when he came down, he landed on the wooden roof of Maris's motor car. He grabbed the roof's front lip with one hand, gun up beside his head, wind blowing his mist coat out behind him. Ahead, Marks bounded down the thoroughfare in a series of steel pushes. Deep within, Wax felt the comforting burn of his own metal. He propelled himself off the motor car and out over the roadway. Marks always performed his robberies in daylight, always escaped along the busiest roadways he could find. He liked the notoriety. He probably felt invincible. Being an Allomancer could do that to a man. Wax sent himself into a series of leaps over motor cars and carriages, passing the tenements on either side. The height and perspective cleared his mind and calmed his emotions as surely as a soother's touch. His worries dissolved, and for the moment there was only the chase. The marksman wore red, an old busker's mask covering his face, black with white tusks, like a demon of the deepness from old stories. And he was connected to the set, according to the appointment book Wax had stolen from his uncle. After so many months, the usefulness of that book was waning, but there were still a few gems to exploit. Marks pushed toward the industrial district. Wax followed, bounding from motor car to motor car. Amazing how much more secure he felt while hurtling through the afternoon air, as opposed to being trapped in one of those horrible motorized boxes. Marks spun in midair and released a handful of something. Wax pushed himself off a lamppost and jerked to the side, then shoved Marks' coins as they passed, sending them out of the way of a random motor car below. The motor swerved anyway, running toward the canal, the driver losing control.
Rust and ruin.
Wax pushed himself back toward the motor car. He tapped his metal mind, increasing his weight 20-fold, and came down on the hood of the motor car. The smash crushed the front of the motor car into the ground, stopping its momentum before it could topple into the canal. He caught a glimpse of stunned people inside, then released his metal mind and launched himself in a push after Marks. He almost lost the man, but fortunately the red clothing was distinctive. Wax spotted him as he bounded up off a low building, then pushed himself high along the side of one of the city's shorter skyscrapers. Wax followed, watching as the man pushed himself in through a window on the top floor, some 12 or 14 stories up. Wax shot up into the sky, windows passing him in a blur. The city of Ellendale stretched out all around, smoke rising from coal plants, factories, and homes in countless spouts. He neared the top floor, one window to the left of where Marks had entered, and as he landed lightly on the stonework ledge, he tossed a coin toward the window Marks had used. As the gunfire shattered the window, Wax increased his weight and smashed through his own window by leaning against it, entering the building. He raised Vindication toward the plaster wall separating him from Marks. Translucent blue lines spread around him, pointing in a thousand different directions, highlighting bits of metal. The nails in a desk behind him were a frightened man in a suit cowered. The metal wires in the walls leading to electric lamps. Most importantly, a few lines pointed through the wall into the next room. These were faint. Obstructions weakened his allomantic sense. One of those lines quivered as someone in there turned and raised a gun. Wax rolled Vindication's cylinder and locked it into place. Haze killer round. He pushed, flaring his metal, and drilled his bullet forward with as much force as he could. It tore through the wall as if it were paper. The metal in the next room dropped to the floor. Wax threw himself against the wall, increasing his weight, and smashed through into the next room, weapon raised, looking for his target. He found only a pool of blood soaking into the carpet and a discarded submachine gun. This room was some kind of clerk's office. Several men and women pressed against the floor, trembling. One woman raised a finger, pointing out a door. Wax gave her a nod and crouched against the wall next to the hallway, then cautiously glanced out. Just then a filing cabinet slid down the hallway toward him. Wax ducked back out of the way as it passed, then leaped out and aimed. His gun immediately lurched backward. Wax grabbed it with both hands, holding tight, but a second push launched his other pistol out of its holster. His feet started to skid, his gun hauling him backward, and he finally dropped Vindication. She tumbled all the way down the hall to fetch up beside the ruins of the filing cabinet, which had crashed into the wall there. He would have to come back for her once this was over. Mark stood at the other end of the hallway, lit by soft electric lights. He bled from a shoulder wound, his face hidden by the black and white mask.
There are 1,000 criminals in this city far worse than I am. And yet you hunt me, lawman. Why? I'm a hero of the people.
You stopped being a hero weeks ago when you killed a child.
That wasn't my fault.
You fired the gun, Marks. You might not have been aiming for the girl, but you fired the gun.
The thief stepped back. The sack slung on his shoulder had been torn, either by Wax's bullet or some shrapnel. It leaked banknotes. Marks glared at him through the mask, eyes barely visible in the electric light. Then he dashed to the side, holding his shoulder as he ran into another room. Wax pushed off the filing cabinet and threw himself in a rush down the hallway. He skidded to a stop before the door Marks had gone in, then pushed off the light behind, entering the room. Open window. Wax grabbed a handful of pens from a desk before throwing himself out the window, a dozen stories up. Banknotes fluttered in the air, trailing behind Marks as he plummeted. Wax increased his weight, trying to fall faster, but he had nothing to push against, and the increased weight helped only slightly against air resistance. Marks still hit the ground before him, then pushed away the coin he'd used to slow himself. A pair of dropped pens with metal nibs pushed ahead of himself into the ground was enough, barely, to slow Wax. Marks leaped away, bounding out over some street lamps. He bore no metal on his body that Wax could spot, but he moved a lot more slowly than he had earlier, and he trailed blood. Wax followed him. Marks would be making for the breakouts, a slum where the people still covered for him. They didn't care that his robberies had turned violent. They celebrated that he stole from those who deserved it.
Can't let him reach that safety.
Wax pushed himself up over a lamppost, then shoved on it behind him to gain speed. He closed on his prey, who checked on Wax with a frantic glance over his shoulder. Wax raised one of the pens, gauging how risky it would be to try to hit Marks in the leg. He didn't want a killing blow. This man knew something. The slums were just ahead.
Next bound.
Wax gripped the pen. Bystanders stared up from the sidewalks, watching the alimentic chase. He couldn't risk hitting one of them. He had to... One of those faces was familiar. Wax lost control of his push. Stunned by what he'd seen, he barely kept himself from breaking bones as he hit the street, rolling across cobbles. He came to a rest, mist coat tassels twisted around his body. He drew himself up on hands and knees.
No. Impossible.
No!
He scrambled across the street.
That face. That face.
The last time he had seen that face, he had shot it in the forehead.
Bloody tan.
The man who had killed Lessie.
A man was here!
Wax shoved through the crowd.
Long fingered, thinning hair. A face almost like a bear skull. Did you see him? Did anyone see him?
People stared at him as if he were daft. Perhaps he was. Wax raised his hand to the side of his head.
Lord Waxillium?
He spun. Marcy had stopped her motor car nearby, and both she and Wayne were climbing out. Had she actually been able to tail him during his chase? No. No, he'd told her where he thought Marks would go.
Waxmate, you all right? What'd he do, knock you from the air?
Something like that.
Wax glanced about one last time.
Rusts. The stress is digging into my mind.
So he got away?
Not yet, he didn't. He's bleeding and dropping money. He'll leave a trail. Come on.
I need you to stay behind as we go into those slums. It's not that I don't want your help. I do. It's just going to be too dangerous for you. You need to stay where I know you're safe. No arguments. I'm sorry.
Wayne, stop talking to your hat and get over here.
Wayne patted his hat and then forced himself to put it down to leave it in the motor car. Wax was a right good fellow, but there were a lot of things he didn't understand. Women, for one. Hats, for another. Wayne jogged over to where Wax and Marcy peered into the breakouts. It seemed a different world in there. The sky inside was strung with clotheslines, derelict bits of clothing dangling like hanged men. Wind blew out of the place, happy to escape, carrying with it uncertain scents. Food half-cooked, bodies half-washed, streets half-cleaned. The tall, compact tenements cast deep shadows even in the afternoon, as if this were the place Dusk came for a drink and a chat before sauntering out for its evening duty. The three of them entered.
The Lord Mistborn didn't want there to be slums in the city, you know. He tried hard to prevent them from growing up. Built nice buildings for the poor, tried to make them last.
Wax nodded, absently moving a coin across his knuckles as he walked. He seemed to have lost his gun somewhere. Had he bummed some coins off Marcy? It never was fair. When Wayne borrowed coins off folks, he got yelled at. He did forget to ask sometimes, but he always offered a good trade. As they penetrated deeper into the breakouts, Wayne lagged behind the other two.
Need a good hat.
The hat was important, so he listened for some coughing. He found the chap nestled up beside a doorway, a ratty blanket draped over his knees. You could always find this type in a slum. Old, clinging to life like a man on a ledge, his lungs half full with various unsavory fluids. The old man hacked into a glove-wrapped hand as Wayne settled down on the steps beside him.
What now? Who are you?
What now? Who are you?
I'm nobody. Dirty outer. I ain't done nothing.
I'm nobody.
Wayne took his flask from the pocket of his duster.
Dirty outer, I ain't done nothing.
Wayne held out the flask of whiskey.
You trying to poison me?
He trying to poison me?
Wayne tipped the whiskey at the man.
So, you an idiot? I'm a son that's an idiot. The real kind. That was born that way. Well, you seem all right anyway.
Well, you seem all right anyway.
Wayne stood up. He reached over to take the man's old cotton cap off his head, then gestured toward the whiskey flask.
In trade? Boy, you are an idiot.
Wayne pulled on the cap.
Could you say another word that starts with H for me?
Huh?
Rustin' wonderful.
Wayne hopped back down the steps onto the street and ditched his duster in a cranny. And along with it, his dueling canes, unfortunately. He kept his wooden knuckle bones, though. The clothing underneath his duster was rough's stock, not so different from what they wore in these slums. Buttoned shirt, trousers, suspenders. He rolled up the sleeves as he walked. The clothing was worn, patched in a few places. He wouldn't trade it for the world. Took years to get clothing that looked right. Used, lived in. Be slow to trust a man with clothing that was too new. You didn't get to wear new, clean clothing by doing honest work. Wax and Marcy had paused up ahead, speaking to some old women with scarves on their heads and bundles in their arms. Wayne wandered over to where a group of men sat under a dirty cloth awning while eating bruised fruit.
Who are those outers?
Wayne sat down. They didn't even question him. A slum like this had a lot of people, too many to know everyone, but you could easily tell if someone belonged or not. And Wayne belonged.
Connors for sure.
They want someone. Connors only come here if they want to arrest someone. They've never cared about us, and never will.
If they did care, they'd do something about all those factories and power plants dumping ash on us. We ain't supposed to live in ash anymore. Armony said it he did.
Wayne nodded. Good point, that. These building walls, they were ashen. Did people care about that on the outside? No. Not as long as they didn't have to live in here. He didn't miss the glares Wax and Marcy drew, pointed at them by people who passed behind or who pulled windows closed up above.
This is worse. Worse than normal.
He'd have to talk to Wax about it, but for now, there was a job to do.
They're looking for something.
Stay out of it.
Maybe there's money in it.
You turn in one of your own. I recognize you. Edip, son, aren't you?
Wayne glanced away, non-committal.
You listen here, son. Don't trust a Connor, and don't be a rat.
I ain't a rat. They're after Marks. I overheard them. There's 1,000 notes on his head, there is.
He grew up here. He's one of us.
He killed that girl.
That's a lie. Don't you go talking to Connor, son. I mean it.
Fine, fine. I'll just go.
You sit back down, or I'll wrap you something good on your head, I will.
You elders always talk about us and don't know how it is these days, working in one of the factories.
We know more than you think.
A bald-headed man handed Wayne a bruised apple.
Eat this, stay out of trouble, and don't go where I can't see you.
Wayne sat back and bit into the apple. It didn't taste half bad. He ate the whole thing, then helped himself to a couple more. It happened soon enough. The men of the fruit-eating group broke apart, leaving Wayne with a basket full of cores. Wayne stuffed another apple in each pocket, then stood up and sauntered off after Bowlhead. He tailed the fellow fairly easily, nodding occasionally at people who nodded back as if they knew him. It was the hat. Put on a man's hat, surround your mind with his way of thinking, and it changed you. Bowlhead ducked into an alley. Well, every rusting street in here felt like an alley. Bowlhead entered an alley's alley. Wayne stepped up to the side of the tiny roadway, then burned bendalloy. Allomancy was a useful trick, that it was. Burning the metal set up a nice little bubble of sped-up time around him. He strolled around the corner, staying inside the bubble. It didn't move when he did, but he could move within it. Yep, there he was, Bowlhead himself, crouching beside a rubbish pile, waiting to see if anyone followed him. Wayne had almost made the bubble too big and caught the man in it.
Sloppy, sloppy.
He fished a ratty blanket out of the part of the rubbish pile that was inside his bubble, then wandered back around the corner and dropped the bubble. Inside the speed bubble, he'd have been moving so quickly Bowlhead wouldn't have seen more than a blur, if that. He wouldn't think anything of it, Wayne was certain. If he were wrong, he'd eat his hat. Well, one of Wax's hats, at least. Wayne found a set of steps and settled down. He pulled his cap down half over his eyes, sidled up to the wall in a comfortable position, and spread the blanket around himself. Just another homeless drunk. Bowlhead was a careful one. He waited inside the alley a whole 5 minutes before creeping out, looking back and forth, then hastening to a building across the street. He whispered something and was let in. Wayne stretched and tossed aside the blanket. He crossed the street to the building that Bowlhead had entered, then started checking the shuttered windows. The ancient shutters were so old, a good sneeze might have knocked them off. He had to be careful to avoid getting splinters in his cheeks as he listened at each window in turn. The men of the slums had an odd sense of morality to them. They wouldn't turn in one of their own to the constables, not even for a reward. But then again, a chap needed to eat. Wouldn't a man like Marks want to hear just how loyal his friends were?
With a pair of Connors for sure. 1,000 notes is a lot, Marks. A whole lot. Now, I'm not saying you can't trust the lads. There's not a bad alloy in the bunch. I can say that a little encouragement will help them feel better about their loyalty.
Ratting out a friend? Completely off limits. Extorting a friend? Well, that was just good business sense. And if Marks didn't act grateful, then maybe he hadn't been a friend after all. Wayne grinned, slipping his sets of wooden knuckle bones over his fingers. He stepped back, then charged the building. He hit the shutters with one shoulder, crashing through, then tossed up a speed bubble the moment he hit the floor. He rolled and came up on his feet in front of Marks, who was inside the speed bubble. The man still wore his red trousers, though he'd removed his mask and was bandaging his shoulder.
Huh? What the?
He snapped his head up, displaying a surprised face with bushy eyebrows and large lips.
Rust? No wonder the fella normally wore a mask.
Wayne swung at his chin, laying him out with one punch. Then he spun, fists up, but the other half-dozen occupants of the room, including Bowlhead, stood frozen just outside the edge of his speed bubble. Now that was right lucky. Wayne grinned, heaving Marks up onto his shoulder. He took his knuckles off, slipping them into his pocket, and got out an apple. He took a juicy bite, waved farewell to Bowlhead, who looked forward with glassy eyes, frozen, then tossed Marks out the window and followed after. Once he passed beyond the edge of his speed bubble, it automatically collapsed.
What the hell was that?
Wayne heaved the unconscious Marks up onto his shoulder again, then wandered back down the road, chewing on his apple.